All right, Keith, you ready to call it a season for the Celtics?
No. No, I'm not. I wanted more basketball. I convinced myself that there might be some more basketball. There is no more basketball.
I was convinced.
Yeah. No, I know you were. But I'm not ready. It's the middle of May. This team should have been playing in June. So I'm very disappointed. Very saddened.
Season over. I think a lot of people are saddened, not just with it being done, but how it went down.
Yeah.
It was as ugly as it gets.
Holy mackerel.
Never a game, never competitive. And now it's abruptly over. Big changes looming over the franchise, as we discussed now for weeks and months. You guys know the deal. You can dial us up, 617-779-7937. It's how you get in touch all day long with Jones and Keefe. That's your phone and text number. You can interact Twitter and Instagram at Jones and Keefe. You can watch and chat twitch.tv/BostonWEEI. Always a healthy chat going on Twitch. And on YouTube, just subscribe to WEEI. Friday, Keefe, was not what I saw coming. Rough.
Bloodbath.
What happened?
It was, they played so well in Game 5, and so many things went their way, but at the same time, so many things didn't go the Knicks' way, right? Like, they had guys really, really struggled. And so you're wondering, right, could that keep up, or if that evens out a little bit, what is it going to look like in Game 6? Well, the reality is, some of the guys for the Celtics turned back into a pumpkin, right? Luke Kornet, hero game in Game 5. Nobody expected it in Game 6. Didn't get it in Game 6. I was also looking on the other side, though, because OG Anunoby, Mikal Bridges were horrible in Game 5. Could you keep those guys down again? As soon as they started hitting their first couple of shots, I was like, oh, no. Like, this is not good. This is not the formula for the Celtics to win this game. They played three games in the playoffs without Tatum. I think the first game against the Magic, like, okay, that's probably what they are. The first game against the Knicks, they played way better than they were. And then the second game against the Knicks, they played even where they played like as bad as they could. They were rushing their shots. It felt like we were complimenting them so much in Game 5 about the ball movement and finding the best shot and at times not even being a three. It seemed like in Game 6, there's too many guys being like, I got it. I'll take it from here. And you're like, that's not a good look. That's early in the shot clock. That's another brick. And then the misses just started to pile up on each other. They didn't play great defense. I mean, there's really nothing they did well in Game 6.
No.
It was start to finish, just a dump of a game.
Poured it on. I mean, the Knicks just poured it on. It was closer than maybe you remember at the end of the first. It was only a six-point game then. But from there,
it felt like it was already starting to get out of reach.
I agree. It completely felt that way. It already felt like it was slipping away. They were down 6. The only guy who could score was Jaylen. And then Knicks outscore them 38-17 in the second quarter, and it's a rout from there. So, yeah, what happened? It all caught up to him. I thought they weren't a better team without Tatum. I thought it might have been a better matchup without Tatum. I thought Tatum almost single-handedly, not to oversimplify it, but I thought he was a big, big factor in losing the first two games. He was so bad in the fourth quarter, and they moved the ball so well in Game 5, as you just said, that I thought maybe for this matchup they'd be better off without him. Wrong. They needed a guy like that Game 6. You needed another guy to lean on. Jaylen, as we've come to find out, not just isn't 100%, might need surgery to repair his torn meniscus.
Yeah.
So
great.
You have a hobbled Jaylen Brown. Who knows what the hell's going on with Porzingis? Tatum's gone for probably the next year. And so it all caught up to him. Now,
Old guys got real old right before our eyes.
It doesn't mean you let them off the hook for how they played, because they were atrocious in Game 6, and we can get into why and how and the coaching and everything else. But I do think a lot of those factors caught up to him. But they were losing this series either way, even before Tatum went down. They were losing this. In retrospect, I was believing late last week. But in retrospect, they were losing this thing either way.
Oh, yeah. I don't think you can look at this series and say, oh, they would have beaten the Knicks if they had Tatum. They had him for four games, and they were down 3-1. So I'm with you. They lose the series whether Tatum's there or not. They lose the series whether Jaylen Brown's knee injury is there or not. They got outplayed in the series. Another reason why, Game 5 to Game 6 was so different was Derek White. I mean, Derek White was so good, and even though we talked a lot about Jaylen Brown and a lot about Luke Kornet, Derek White was hitting his threes. He scored 34 points, which was a team high. He was atrocious in Game 6. You don't usually see a number like this. He played 30 minutes. You notice his plus minus?
I did.
Derek White was minus 45.
We're going to talk to Terp at High Noon. Terp tweeted all these out. I believe it was the worst of his career if I saw that.
How could that not be? That's going to be the worst of almost anybody's career. How are you on the floor for that much time and you get minus 45? He had 8 points in the game. Game 6, he made 7 threes. This game, he scored 8 points. So you just didn't have anybody really doing. I thought early on, like, Jaylen Brown was kind of trying, but obviously he's a little bit banged up. But even still, like, a banged up Brown being your best player, also not a recipe for a win. But yeah, just really frustrating, I think, because of how convincing their game five victory was. And, you know, maybe bad job by us having short memories. You see in the playoffs, in the history of basketball, some lopsided games don't carry over to the next game. Happens all the time. Teams that win series lose by 30 in a series, right? They won the series, but hey, you lost game three by 30. Like, what the hell happened there? So game six just wasn't anything like game five. I mean, the Celtics couldn't throw it in the ocean. They also couldn't stop anybody. And then once the Knicks got rolling, that second quarter, I mean, for sure the game was over.
Derek White, minus 45, career high. This is Terp's tweet from the other week, other day.
Yeah, yeah.
Jaylen was a minus 33, career high. Drew Holiday, second worst of his career, minus 34. Horford, third worst of his career, which is not a short career, minus 33. So non-competitive. And again,
not great, Bob. No.
What if I told you this? Baylor Shireman?
Uh-huh.
Plus 3.
Well, how about that? Nice.
Torrey Craig?
Yeah.
Plus 7.
Wow.
Let's go!
Should have put Megan Thee Stallion's boyfriend out there sooner.
Get him out there. Would have worked out a little bit better. Who deserves the most blame for game six? I mean, I think, again, overall, I put a lot of blame early in the series on Tatum. Best player on the floor, at least he should be, in theory. And he was, I thought, horrendous in those first two games. Can't blame him for the other night. Yeah, yeah. So who deserves the most blame?
I'm going to put it on the backcourt, actually. I know Jaylen Brown's their best player left, but I think Drew Holiday and Derek White played so poorly. And I do expect that a lot out of those guys. I mean, Derek White, we give him the praises all the time. Every team in the league would want Derek White. Team USA wanted Derek White. Like, he is such a good glue-type player, but he can do more. And with Tatum out, you needed his scoring to be more. And then also Drew Holiday, which I really thought was the missing piece last year, pushed them over the top and won a title. I'm not expecting 20 points and, you know, 12 assists out of Drew Holiday anymore. But those two guys together shot 4 of 19 from the field. And it's not like their great defense was offsetting things on the other side. You know, Jalen Brunson was able to get what certainly enough of what he needed. They had a balanced scoring attack. So you weren't scoring on offense. You weren't taking away the best player on the other side. Like, you,
what exactly were you doing there?
So I'd put it on the backcourt.
Text line agrees with you. 617-779-7937. You're not going to mention the effort. Drew Holiday didn't even sweat all game. I would focus on Jalen. I'll be consistent.
Yeah, that's fine.
Like, we gave him all this praise in game five for, what were the numbers? 12 assists versus 2 turnovers off the top of my head? Something like 12
and 2.
6 assists against 7 turnovers. And for a while, he was the only guy scoring, right? He was the only guy who could score early in the game. But you talk about them pressing and trying to put it all on their shoulders and not being able to do it. I think he was the most guilty of that. He fouled out of the game on top of it. So, look, we give him credit for stepping up when the team needed him. He didn't the other night. He needed to be the best guy out there. He wasn't. And so I'd look at Jaylen. Neither of us said the coach. I think a lot of people would say the coach. How much is on Mazzulla?
I mean, probably as much as you can put on a coach. Like, for the game or for the series? Because I think for the series, I had some more questions early on. I mean, this game kind of got away from him. It was almost like, all right, what could you do? What could any coach really do at that point? You could argue, like, how do you not get these guys ready? Well, there should be some self-motivation in an elimination game. I have more issues with, you know, not calling timeout, running the same play twice, like certain things that he did earlier in the series more so than even this one. But we had the stat, you know, as the playoffs were going on, the 5 head coaches prior to Mazzulla to win a title aren't with their team, or 4 out of those 5 aren't with their team right now. And part of it is this trend has continued where the NBA champion the next year loses in the second round. So we're not seeing the days of back-to-back titles, three-peats, these like dynasties forming. We're seeing such a deep league and these top teams getting picked off the next year. But the talent's obviously there. So a lot of other teams have decided, like, all right, maybe the coach needs to change. Maybe we swap the coach out. So I thought it was a very disappointing playoff run for Mazzulla, but I'm almost always going to put more blame on the players than the coach. Just like I'm always going to give more credit to the players than the coach.
I thought they could survive a shooting night like they had. And beat New York on the road. I think we even specifically said, I'm like, if they shoot like they shot in game 2, which was 10 out of 40 from 3, and we always hone in on the 3-point numbers, Mazzulla wants us to hone in on them, so let's do it. I think I even said, if they shoot like they shoot in game 2, yeah, I think they can go on the road and win. They shot better. They were 12 out of 40. Not great by any means, 30%.
And some of that's garbage time players.
But, I mean, it's as simple as looking at it and saying Mazzulla told them to hoist up threes. When they made them in game five, they won. Yep. When they didn't, they didn't. And so, you know, I think a lot of people are taking a critical look at Mazzulla and what he does. I was surprised. We're going to play this for you coming up. Scal, I think, even took a little bit of a shot at Mazzulla. At least that's who I think he's talking about. You can tell me who you think he's talking about.
It was a cryptic kind of
very cryptic
review of the game.
Cryptic is the right way to put it. So do you think there's any chance Mazzulla's fired this offseason?
I don't.
Me neither.
I don't think it's right after this year. And I also, in a weird way, Tatum's injury might give him more job security. I think if Tatum was back next year, regardless of some of the other pieces that they move on from, which we're going to be talking about today throughout the rest of the offseason, I think if they fall short next year, I could see Mazzulla being fired after next year. But now I'm not sure. Now without Tatum, I think Mazzulla's probably safe for like two more years.
We said this last week. Oddly enough, the Tatum injury gave Mazzulla some job security. Like oddly enough, all of a sudden, I feel like he's pretty secure. And that does not mean he's a perfect head coach.
No.
I think he's fine. You know, and I largely agree with you on this, Keith. How much can you really put on a coach? How much can you really give credit to a coach? I think that's hard to do. But they couldn't win with Udoka. They couldn't win with Stevens. They did win with him. He deserves credit for that. I know it was a different roster and a better roster.
Yeah.
He deserves credit for not getting in the way a year ago, where at times, you know, the coaches would get in the way or they couldn't get the most out of the players. I'll give him credit for that. I'm not firing him. I know a lot of people are done with him and want him fired. So you can discuss that. It's 617-779-7937. I want to play you two clips from post-game on Friday, or maybe even some of it was the breakup interviews Saturday as well. But I thought these were kind of different ends of the spectrum. Let me hear from Derek White after the Celtics lost in Game 6 to New York on Friday.
It sucks. Never going to get this season back. Never going to have the exact same team again. And so obviously there was some highs and obviously some lows of a season. But at the moment, you're just kind of down.
Okay, kind of down. Makes sense.
Kind of down.
You're eliminated.
Highs and lows. I don't know how many highs, but
there weren't a ton of highs.
It's fine. You beat the Magic.
But when he says we're never going to have the exact same team again, what does that mean?
Well, I mean, they're just not. I mean, like, Al Horford's a free agent. He's probably going to be gone. With everybody knows that.
But
you think
that's what he's talking about? Just like some more bottom of the roster kind of things? Or you think he's talking bigger?
Both. Well, and he knows Tatum's out for all of next year, right? So, like, the roster next year, even if they decide to pay everybody, it's going to be different next year. But these guys are obviously very well aware of what's going on.
Well,
we talk about it on a daily basis.
That, to me, is my takeaway from the comment, too. It's like,
they know.
Don't tell me these guys weren't aware, didn't know. It's not on their minds. They're not thinking about it. Maybe it doesn't impact them, like, on the floor in the middle of the game. Yeah. I have no idea. Don't tell me they weren't thinking. Derek White volunteers that up after
they
get eliminated. He's like, we're never going to have this same team again. It sucks.
Yeah, but you could make the case, I don't know, last year even, like, they kept all their top guys. But as a guy finishing his season in the NBA, you know that you don't take the, 12, 13, 15 guys and bring them back the next year.
Well, so look.
So there's also some of that.
When he says the exact same team, it could be some of that.
It just never happens.
Maybe he was being very precise and talking about bottom of the roster players and not higher up. This was Jalen talking about the future of the Celtics as well. Again, we assume there will be changes. I thought Jalen took a bit of a different track than Derek White.
It's a lot to be excited for. This journey is not the end. It's not the end for me. I'm looking forward to coming back stronger. You know, so, you know, you just take this with your chin up. You know, I know Boston, you know, it looks gloomy right now. You know, obviously with JT being out and us, you know, kind of ending the year. But it's a lot to look forward for. It's a lot to look forward to, and I want the city to feel excited about that. Like, this is not the end. So I'm looking forward to what's next.
What'd you think of that sales pitch?
Very positive spin, I guess. I you know, the season didn't kind of come to an end. First of all, Jalen, the season's over. Like, the season's for sure over. And yeah, it's a downer. I mean, it just, to what degree? How far away are they going to be? How much are they going to blow it up? A lot of that is very much out of his control, and we also don't know the answer. Like, is Holiday, Porzingis, Hauser to a lesser degree, Cornette, are they all gone? And then it's just Jalen Brown and other guys, and Derek White and guys they can afford. Is Jalen Brown possibly gone? Like, I mean, there's so many different things that they could do to this team that we don't even know. He's trying to put a positive spin on it, which I respect. He's the one that's going to have to go out there. He's going to be the face of this, like next, I assume. And
I mean, so, he assumes. I mean, look, yeah. I mean, and maybe that's a guy who's been assured of something. Maybe not. Maybe he's just talking like he expects to be here, and he has no idea. But that sounds like a guy who thinks he's going to be back and is selling the whole fan base on, hey, don't skip out on us next year when we don't have Tatum. I mean, that's what it sounded like.
No, he's trying to pull it. I just feel like it's going to be a long year. Now, I don't think it's going to be check tankathon because, oh, look at the lottery. Like, I don't think it's going to be one of those years. As a Celtics fan, we've done that multiple times. I don't think it's going to be that. But is it going to be, hey, you're, you know, a couple games over 500, you're the sixth seed, and, you know, who do you got in the first round of the playoffs? I think it's more likely that, which for some fan bases is great, and that's like, hey, a shot in the arm. I'm sure Orlando was thrilled to have the season that they had to make the playoffs with their young guys. But when it was championship or bust for a while, next year is going to be the first year in like 6 years where it's not championship or bust. I mean, if you're saying championship next year with that roster, like, I don't know what to tell you.
No, I wouldn't say it. They should be a playoff team. I think they should be a playoff team. I would sit here handicapping it now. I don't know what other teams are going to do this offseason.
Yeah.
But handicapping it now, they should probably win a series next year. Like, be in the mix to beat a team in round one. Who did New York beat in round one? Could they beat a team like Detroit next year? Maybe. You know, who did Indiana beat in round one?
Milwaukee.
Thank you. Could you beat a team like that?
Especially without Giannis. Milwaukee won't be there.
Okay, but that level of team, like a 48-50 win team. Like, sitting here today, I think that's what they should be, assuming big pieces are back. But I don't know. They're meeting with Cooper Flagg. Like, who knows who's going to be back? I have no idea what they're going to look like.
Yeah, I don't think they're a play-in team. Like, I think they're better than that. And then if you're the play-in team, obviously you have to play the top two seeds. So I think if they're somewhere between 3, 4, 5, 6, then yeah, they could be competitive and win a playoff series. But that's kind of what it is. Like the last 4 years, it was like, who are they going to face in the finals?
I agree. It is not championship or bust. Yeah. It's like, get to the playoffs. Can you win a round? That to me would be the expectation and what would make for a successful year. But it's a long way to go with a lot of potential moves. Last Friday night, we watched the Celtics get blown out by the New York Knicks to advance to the Eastern Conference Finals. So we are in the offseason here on WEEI Afternoons, but we get one last chat with Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston. Scal is brought to you by Shaw's and Star Market, perfecting the art of fresh, by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, the name to know when the drains don't flow, and by FindMassMoney.gov. Scal, how we doing this week? And can you explain to me why I'm watching Pacers, Knicks, and not the Celtics advancing?
I mean, it all goes back to those two games that we blew. Like, if you don't blow those games, you're obviously, you're up 2-0. The Celtics losing that series, but, and I get, okay, if you blow one of those leads, but to kind of get trapped like that twice, that's where it all started. And, like, think about it. Like, people think, well, you could still win the series. That means, like, theoretically, you played well enough to beat a team 6 out of 7 times and then, four times in a row during the season, during the regular season. So then the Jason Tatum injury is, like, it was a disastrous finish to, I think, all of us expecting, like, that team to walk through the playoffs.
You know, Scal, just talking about that, you know, kind of game six, you know, coming off of the great, you know, game five that the team had without JT. I mean, when you look at just kind of how the game six played out, I mean, just it was a blowout. It was never close to you. I don't know. I mean, part of me wants to judge the organization and maybe even a little bit of JB to some degree. Do you think that the way they played in game six is an indictment to the organization or to JB at all? How do you look at the way the season ended with that performance in game six?
Not like that. I think when I like kind of break down that game, I think, all right, Derek White got going in game five. We talked about Derek White. And then, like, I don't know how you see it, but the way I watch it, as the Celtics were coming down in transition, you should see, like, the individual guys that would sprint to Derek White 35 feet from the basket, and they were just like, we cannot allow Derek White to make any transition threes. So they take one of our, you know, that was 34 points, and, you know, for basketball, if you start making shots early, other things open up, and, you know, momentum and all that stuff. So they did a good job of taking him out of this scenario. And then, you know, all year long, never, like, the players are clearly good enough, like Holiday, Brown, you know, those guys, Porzingis, who obviously had the illness. Those guys are good enough to carry a team, or they could do it collectively. But once Tatum was out, it was weird that we had nowhere to go at that point. And Brown is usually really dominated with, you know, when he has space. If you just, Tatum's out there, White, and then Porzingis, and people are really worried about him. Brown's allowed to get to the paint, play off 2 feet, kind of pivot around, and then score. And so that was, like, not going to happen anymore. The Knicks had a great rim protection in Mitchell Robinson and Karl Anthony Towns. And then for Brown, he just didn't have another place to go. And, you know, for him, it would be, like, that's something that you have to learn. You have to learn how to break down defenses. You have to learn how to see two players that are leaning towards you and then hit the right guy at the right time. So there's a lot of things that – and it took Tatum a long time. Like, I always thought last year – he just started coming into his own. This year, he was incredible at reading all the coverages and making the right play. But that takes time. So, obviously, we were great because Derek White had it going, and then Jaylen Brown was ridiculous defensively, high energy and all that. But that's hard to sustain, and that was a hard carryover. And the Knicks were impressive. You have to admit, like, of all the games they played, that was – forget the 20-point comebacks. That was the most impressive game that they played.
But, Scal, I think something that Celtics fans have been wondering ever since the season ended so unceremoniously last Friday night was, how does a team go from playing what might be their best game of the season, if not the last couple of years, to how the hell does the team play easily their worst game of the year, if not the last several decades, all within a span of 48 hours?
Because you're not factoring in the other team, and, you know, the other team went shot for shot with the Celtics, and we were playing great. Both teams were playing great basketball at the end of the first half of game five. You know, I think we were close. Both teams shooting close to 50% from three and moving the ball and like playing out of their mind. And then the third quarter happened. So, you know, it was one quarter where the Knicks probably mailed it in and the Celtics kept bombing threes, and, you know, water kind of finds its level. So I think the margins are a lot smaller. Like, we probably didn't play as great as you might think if you're looking at the opponent. And then vice versa, like the Knicks, you know, once they got up by a certain amount, like, our team just didn't have the horsepower to come back or the energy based off what they led in game five. Like, it's not, you know, if those were separated out by, you know, 2 weeks, you can make that argument. But just with 2 days, and then also, you know, I started out by saying, give the Knicks credit. When Derek White was on the floor in game six, watch the difference. I've never seen, this is like the reaction to the way they treated Derek White was the same reaction that you see with Steph Curry. Like, people lose their minds running out to Steph Curry, two guys, just to not give up a three from Steph, and they give up a wide open dunk from Draymond Green. Like, that was the Knicks' decision. I can tell you right away, like, right when I saw that game, I'm saying, okay, well, today is going to be a day where it's going to be really hard for Derek White to get free. And he had 34. So now he has to deal with the idea of getting face guarded like Steph Curry. But Steph Curry can also go for 40, but he's seen that coverage, you know, 10,000 times in his life, I would assume.
Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston, joining us on WEEI Afternoons. Along those lines, you talk about an adjustment they made on Derek White. Did you think Tibbs outcoached Mazzulla in this series? Was there a coaching advantage for the Knicks that played out in addition to the shooting and the injuries and everything else that played?
I don't look at anything like that. Like, this guy outcoached that guy, and I know that people like to use that term, but the Knicks outplayed the Celtics in game one and two. In the third, halfway through the third quarter and the fourth quarter. So I would point to that, and there's no doubt about it. Now, I'm as critical as anybody about I've countless times on the broadcast, and I see sometimes we could still squeeze out a win. And when you lose 1 of 82, it's not that big of a deal, but in the playoffs, it obviously is. But, and I've always said this, like, look at our pace as the game goes along. We're one of the slowest teams in the fourth quarter, and I've always, like, lived by this. Now, I'm not the coach, and I don't know what Joe knows. I just know when, like, we're at our best, like, we're kind of pushing the ball, and it doesn't mean, like, I'm not like my man Tommy, where I'm like, run, 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 run no matter what, even though it would be interesting if we ran no matter what, how good this team would be. And, like, I always think, like, okay, when you run and you have more talent – and you move the ball because you have, like, this unique system where you have five guys on the court that can bomb a three. So why wouldn't you just continue to put the teams in rotation and then bomb threes, right? I would think, why would you ever, with a team like this, ever dribble the ball for 20 seconds and take a step back? I don't think that would – I don't know if I would ever think that that's okay. But it does seem like we get a 20-point lead, and in the second half, we, like, start walking the ball up the court. Now, I know there's a reason for it. I have no idea what that reason is, but it caught us. It caught us. It cost us – I can't say a championship, but I could definitely say it cost us game one and game two. And I just don't understand it. And I wish there was a reason, and I wish there was something that I didn't, like, that I knew. Well, here's when you have this guy, this is what you want to do. Or were they practicing for something that I was unaware of? But, like, that kind of stuff is hard to win. And if I was the other team, what I would do is exactly what teams do. They crash four guys to the glass. So we're going to walk the ball up anyways. You have no threat at all of getting giving up a layup. So it's not just, wait, we can walk the ball up. Like, there's more to it. Like, now they get offensive rebounds and confidence, and then they get to the free throw line. There's a lot that goes into it. Basketball is not an offense or defense game. Everything is connected. A bad shot leads to a break. A missed layup leads to a five-point swing. Walking the ball up the court leads to teams wanting to push and fight on the offensive glass and crashing four. Historically, in the NBA, you crash four, you get burned. But we don't burn people in the second half for whatever reason. I mean, go look at our fast break points in the second half. It's like it should never be the case when you have this much talent. But there is a reason. I just don't know what it is.
All right, Scal. I was one of my questions, and Dan Ball can vouch for it because I wrote it down right here. My question number six for Scal was, do you have a hard time giving New York credit? Well, you have given them credit, especially against how they played the Celtics. But just – in general, what do you think? How does the Eastern Conference Finals play out? I mean, are the Knicks, do you think, a championship medal team? How do you see things playing out between them and the Pacers?
So, all full transparency, like, I've known Jalen Brunson since he was like in ninth grade or something like that. I played for Tibbs and Rick Brunson in Chicago, and Jalen used to come by afterwards, and I could not. I thought the way that Rick Brunson would ride Jalen while he worked him out, I was like, man, that's tough, man. This guy's like really hard on his kid. And I'm like, man, I'm pretty hard on my kid, right? And I was like, man, how can this kid endure this stuff, right? So if any kid could endure like the attention to detail that Rick Brunson, I kind of worked with him, I was like, okay, this kid has a special mindset, and he does. That's the reality. One in high school, never went to like, I'm going to go to the best school and be like the sixth man. Like, he just went to the school. AAU is the same thing. I played in the local AAU tournament. Went to Villanova, won. Went to Dallas, no Luka Doncic, won. Going to the Knicks, he won. So we should give him a lot of credit. And I think, like, where I stand is, I got to give those other guys a lot more credit than I did. Like, I like Josh Hart, but I thought they would miss DiVincenzo. And I thought, like, Karl-Anthony Towns is, like, not what they needed. But clearly it all worked out. But just like anything, and I'll be the first to admit it, I'm not anything as a player unless I'm with a really good player. And I got a chance to play with Jason Kidd early on, and Rondo and Pierce and Garnett and Allen and like those guys, right? That allows me to be a better NBA player than I actually was. So I think like Brunson has that gravity towards him. The rest of those guys, like, they kind of gain their confidence from Brunson, but I was shocked. Are they championship medal? They don't look like it, but I think Brunson, a lot like Steph Curry, and I've coached Steph and I've been around Brunson, they got a lot of similarities in their mindset. And I think that kind of holds true with why those two have had a lot of success.
Yep. I can't wait for the Pacers to win in five. Scal. Sorry,
just you hate the Knicks fans? Or
I saw them throw trash at that guy. Come on, get out of here with that nonsense. Throwing trash on the guy in the Tyrese Halliburton jersey.
Yeah, I know.
That's not cool.
That is so rude, man. I know, but
making Eagles fans look nice.
Yeah. I mean, but like, if you watch Brunson, don't you think like the guy's 6'1"? Look what he does. Like, he's
awesome.
Incredible. He's incredible.
I did, but Scal, I did want to ask one thing. In the aftermath of the Game 6 loss, as most Celtics fans probably quickly turned the TV off or just went to binge drinking and, you know, streaming stuff on their televisions, you did say that you felt like at times they cheated the game. Could you explain that to us? And was that was that in regards to the series, the season, or both?
Yeah, a little bit of both. Like, Probably more the games one and two, but like in the 82 games, you know, like you can have bad habits and still win games. Like I would say, like our 2010 team kind of did that a little bit. Like just didn't have like the right winning habits, didn't have the same winning habits that they had the year before, and then that in turn comes back to bite you. That's just how it works, and it came back to bite us. Like we had a 13-point lead in the fourth quarter. I probably could have won that, but then. You know, maybe the habits of cheating the game throughout the season. Like, I know people, like, want to, like, think the regular season doesn't matter. It does matter. Like, the habits you build in the regular season matter. And so, you know, you watch that team and you watch how they kind of, like, got snake bit a few times by, you know, hey, we're okay. It's a long season. We can miss shots. And I would say no problem if you're missing shots. But if it's not that big of a deal, then why does it affect your defense on the other end? How are you giving up 38 points in the fourth quarter to the Knicks? And I could say the exact same thing about Minnesota last night. I don't know if you guys caught that game. But, yeah, we got some wide-open shots and we missed. Okay, great. That's not that big of a deal. Okay, then why do you give up 70 in the second half then? If you're not affected by those missed shots, then why are you giving up 70? So then I would say, all right, well, if you are having to be affected a little bit more than you say you are, then all of a sudden, then you would drive it and you would move it and you would do some things different just to forget offense for 1 second, just to set your defense, right? And that's where I felt like they, you know, like if everything is based off of makes and misses and we miss some wide open shots and it's not that big of a deal, then how come when we watch, it looks like a big deal? How come it looks like everyone slumps their shoulders and gets back on defense and we give up offensive rebounds and all those things if it's not that big of a deal? So that's where I kind of feel like, you know, are you building championship habits? Last year, there was no doubt. Now, I think the East is better, no doubt about that. But you building championship habits to start and you just keep on going. And you have slip-ups. Everyone does. But you don't blow 2 20-point leads at home in the third from the third quarter. It's actually never happened in NBA playoff history that a team blew 2 20-point leads. Think about that. Ever. Not ever in an entire playoff series, a playoff run, it happened in back-to-back nights.
Not the history we thought the Celtics would be making, but Scal, we're in the offseason. Brad Stevens held his press conference. He kind of deflected a lot of the big picture questions the other day. Seems like a lot of people on the outside are expecting changes, trades, Porzingis, guys not back. Are you of that mindset? Are you not quite sure yet? How would you handicap this offseason we're embarking on?
Yeah, I don't know. I went into that press conference. My boy Kevin Miller wanted me to work thinking that Brad was going to make some firework announcements. That was like we're really disappointed. Of course you're disappointed. We knew you were disappointed that you lost. What are you going to do about it? You know, yep. So I don't know. And I think they probably could have had a plan beforehand, and then Jason Tatum gets hurt. It has to reevaluate your plan. So, you know, I if you would ask me if Jason Tatum was healthy and all these things, I'd probably have a different answer. With the Tatum injury, when is he coming back? I don't know. Are they going to apply for a designated player exception? Like there's all kinds of things that I have no idea what they're going to do. So I'm being honest, I have no idea what they're going to do.
Who do you think, is there any untouchables? I mean, is Jaylen Brown, D. White, anybody you see on this team as just untouchable?
That's a good question, Ted. That's a loaded question. I'll lie to you. Ready? I'll lie to you. Brown, Tatum, and White, untouchable. Pritchard at his number, untouchable. Those are four untouchables, all right? I'll give you that. By the way, Ted, I don't even know if you know. That's a great loaded question on your part, and I give you a ton of credit for doing it, my man.
It's my last one. I wanted to slide in real quick there. I appreciate you indulging me.
Good one. That was a good one, Ted. That's worse than you doing the 24 push-ups to my, or pull-ups to my pull-ups. Two.
there was one other something I heard. I think it was actually on the podcast with LeBron and Steve Nash. Scal.
Bored?
They accused them of being bored. I mean, could you ever imagine a Celtics team in any iteration under any coach, especially with this pedigree, being bored with themselves? And if so, do you think next season with Tatum out reverses that potential trend? If so.
Yeah, I'll tell you, I'll go even one step further. They look bored when they're healthy and whole. When they were shorthanded, they didn't look bored. And it didn't look boring for us. But for whatever reason, when they were whole, and I guess towards the end of the year it trended a little bit better, but go look at the number. Compare, all right, you could do some work and you could tell your fans, right? Compare last year's starting five net rating to this year's starting five. Same starting five last year to this year, and look at the difference. That, to me, looks like you're bored with the details and bored with the process. But I know when they had guys out, like, you know, Luke Kornet was like a net rating darling all year long. Like, he's kind of he's a backup. So for whatever reason, they had like a little bit of a spark when Kornet comes into the game, and it looked different. So, yeah, everyone like uses their own language. Bored, to me, is like not focusing on the attention to detail, right? It's like not doing the little things that it takes to win throughout the 82-game season. And really, when you're up by 13 in the second half or whatever it may be. But, yeah, I think there's some – there's probably a little bit of like that's LeBron's version of saying like, you know, not having championship habits.
Scal, not that this is an option, I don't think, but I'm a huge JB fan, and yet earlier in the week I admitted that if I could pull it off, find some way to do it, I would absolutely trade him for the number one pick, Cooper Flagg. Would you make that deal?
That's another loaded question.
That's a good one. Just doing our job, buddy.
I would avoid that one as well. I'll steer clear of that one. I mean, all right, maybe so, I'm giving you my answer, but yeah, I'll steer clear of that one.
Yeah.
Too.
So, okay, an easy one to end on then before we let you go. I saw that Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is going to win the MVP. I think that was expected. Is that where your vote would have gone, or do you think Jokic is still the best basketball player?
Jokic is still the best basketball player, probably the most impactful basketball player, but it's just how it goes, right? Like, voter fatigue, and by the way, like, SGA's advanced analytics, now the UPS guy is upset at me too for the Celtics losing. SGA's advanced analytics would also point to like a very good on-court, off-court, and all those things. So there's a lot where it's not just he put up monster numbers and it didn't affect winning. They both affected winning, and he put up monster numbers as well. So I think I would have went that direction as well.
Hey, Andy, real quick, I just want to ask
you. You want to say hi to WEI? Say hi.
I want to say hi to you first.
He's mad at
hi,
me.
UPS.
He's mad that the Celtics lost.
That's awesome. What's up, bro? Hey, just SGA's game. Do you, a lot of people, I don't know, kind of harken it to maybe like a James Harden kind of game about how he draws. You like his game? It's aesthetically, you enjoy it?
Yeah. I'll tell you why. Because he leads the league and drives. I like guys that drive to the basket.
Yeah.
He don't settle for three. Those guys.
Finally.
All right. You wanted the picture? Gotcha. See ya.
Hi, UPS guys.
This is amazing.
That's awesome. Take care of those guys.
Sir. Yes, sir.
Hey.
All right.
Hey. Life of Scal.
All right. Because he leads the league in drives, and I like guys that go to the basket. And everyone's like, he's a foul merchant. Well, I mean, a lot of guys in the league are just pulling up from three. At least he's getting downhill. So there's a reason he does get to the free throw line, because he does drive. Now, does he know how to situate contact? Yes. If you James Harden, not so much. One thing to look at, Ted, if you're looking at SGA, there's only two players in the history of the NBA to average 30 points in less than two turnovers, Michael Jordan and SGA.
Great stat.
Dang.
Did not know that. Okay.
All right, Scal, we're going to let you go the FedEx guy, the Amazon guy, whoever else comes by and joins the show. Enjoy the offseason, and we'll talk to you down the road. And I'm also taking it as a yes that you would trade Jaylen Brown for Cooper Flagg, but no one needs to know. We'll just move on. Thanks, Scal.
All right, I'll talk to you guys.
Yeah. Thanks, bud.
Amen. Brian Scalabrine, NBC Sports Boston, joining us here on WEEI Afternoons, as well as his UPS delivery man. We appreciate him chiming in with his opinions, his disappointment on the Celtics.
I am told by Jackson that Hill Notes a must not miss this morning, so we'll get to those coming up. But to wrap up the Celtics season, unfortunately, our Celtics insider, Mego, has stopped by this morning. Hello and good morning, and how are you?
Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Great. Are you in the camp that LeBron James is, that the Celtics, particularly Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown, just got bored
with being so good?
No.
Is that, okay.
that's just silly idea to me. Like, bored of going back-to-back for the first time for this franchise since 1969. I don't think that there was a lack of focus with this group overall. Now, every team in the regular season has ebbs and flows when it's as long as the NBA season is. But the biggest issue for this team was health. And I think when we look back decades from now and we say, what happened with that title defense for that team that ran back the roster with so many good players and didn't get back to the finals? We'll say, well, there was, of course, the Tatum injury. But even before that, Jaylen Brown with the meniscus tear, Drew Holiday dealing with something that kept him out at the end of the first round.
Porzingis's,
what was it, post-viral.
Lingering viral, long viral, whatever it is.
Yeah. So I think that's where we'll look at.
But is it hard to say that when Kristaps did have games where he looked great? Jaylen Brown had games, despite the meniscus, where he looked great. They lose those first two games with Jason Tatum. Like, Drew Holiday, I'm with you, a completely different player than what we saw last season. But to me, it's hard to blame injury when those guys did perform really well on some nights.
I agree. I think game two of the Knicks series is going to be one that people look back on and go, what happened there? Yeah. From a basketball sense, because dropping one at home is one thing, but then losing in a similar fashion at the end of the game, second game, is it's pretty inexcusable. But I just think the Porzingis thing is the strangest, because to your point, Courtney, he had seven games after he came back from the illness in the late winter where he was averaging 22 points per game, and he kept telling us like how bad he felt. And everybody was thinking, well, you look pretty good on the court, so I don't know what's going on with you. And then it just seems like it got re-aggravated through these last two series.
Michael, the thing I was going to say, I understood what LeBron was saying, but I think he used the wrong word. I wouldn't say bored. For me, it was complacency, because when you're up 20 or complacency, or you think you can just roll the ball out or turn the switch off whenever you want, because that's what games one and two looked like to me. And that's what I would say that I think hit them this series, where they kind of got complacent, took their foot off the gas a little bit, and it bit them in the ass, because in the third and fourth quarter of those first two games, you went ice cold and they got hot.
I think that there's definitely something to that. Like games one and two, Brad Stevens said at the press conference that I went to a couple days ago, that's where the series was lost, in games one and two. In reality, that they blew those two games in the series. But even then, it goes back to Kristaps Porzingis is somebody who I said for the last 6 months, you're going to need him for this title defense. Like, you need him healthy. And he wasn't able to be instrumental in any way in this series.
But you brought up Brad Stevens. What is your guess at what these guys, what does this team look like next season?
It's going to be different, like, no doubt. The way that you're sitting here today, the latest that I saw was, even before the tax penalty, you're $230 million in your payroll. So you're probably looking at having to shed somewhere between $20 and $25 million to get under the second apron. And you heard Wick Grosbeck say, like, no team in this league is going to stay in that second apron for more than 2 years. I think what's difficult here is that a lot of people are looking at the situation and saying, well, you could move on from Kristaps Porzingis or Drew Holiday, and both of those guys have around $30 million contracts. Unfortunately, because of how short your playoff duration was compared to what you expected, you're now showing everybody kind of your cards at the poker table. Everybody knows that you had to get under that luxury tax. And Kristaps Porzingis was sick for the playoffs, and Drew Holiday didn't look like himself. And Kristaps Porzingis is on an expiring contract, so maybe that's someone, if you want to move on from him, you wait until even the next regular season and move him ahead of the trade deadline. Drew Holiday has 3 years left on his. And so you get in this situation where it's like, are you just looking to shed salary? Are you looking to move other pieces, Sam Hauser, maybe like a core guy on the roster? I don't think they should move on from core guys at this point, even with Tatum's injury. But everybody knew that there was going to be serious changes to the rotation.
Well, you and Curtis would agree on that. Curtis, you want him to run it back as is, right? And just pay the penalty.
Yeah, I don't know that the path back to championship contention is done with an entirely rebuilt supporting cast. I just think that is incredibly difficult to do. Brad Stevens is excellent. I think if anybody could do it, it would be him. Mm. But I just, it is where the Celtics found themselves in that injury to Tatum, you know, despite what you thought it might do to the series, is just such a devastating blow. Because it's so hard to get where the Celtics are. The NBA, the parity, you see it across the sport. And they were by far and away the best team in the NBA when healthy and right. And
see, Mego, I disagree with Curtis on this point, because the reason why I do is you're still going to have the two superstars. So you might be down a year, but when Tatum comes back, you're still, if you don't move on from Jaylen Brown, you still have the two superstars, and you're able to build that new dynasty, or that new potential dynasty or championship team, I should say, around those two. It's not like you're going to now have to try to find, like when OKC got rid of their core, they're like, all right, who's the next guy? And they had to wait for SGA. With this team, even if you get rid of the core, the core is Drew Holiday, Derek White, Porzingis, Al Horford, you still got those two superstars in 2 years that you can build those around.
You don't think they'll ever move off of Jaylen Brown?
I wouldn't, because
that's where the value is, though.
I understand that, but what are you getting back for it, right? And my thing is, if you keep the two and you say, all right, Jaylen next year, and then we move on from under these pieces to get lower, and maybe a team's not as good, the following year you got Jaylen and Jason, and you could probably add another third max contract, and you're right back to being a contender.
My opinion is that obviously Jason and Jaylen are still the plan for whatever your core is. And Derek White is on an extremely team-friendly contract, and I think a fringe all-star contender every year. So,
but you can get something for him.
But what are you getting? So here's where I start to get a little queasy when you talk about the future, because if you're saying, oh, you get this pick back and that pick back, I'm saying, okay, so are you flipping those picks to another team for a player?
Yeah.
Because where Tatum is in his window, assuming that he, and fingers crossed, is able to come back and be the all-NBA player he is, and where Jaylen Brown is, these are guys in their late 20s. Mm-hmm. Like, they're supposed to be in their prime. And you're telling me you're interested in going back in the lottery?
No.
And you get developing the, somebody for
you
three?
You but get some those people picks are saying that. I wouldn't agree with that. I was even on the point of have Jaylen Brown and a bunch of Scrabeens, and maybe you're in the lottery, and you take that lottery pick, and you flip that for a player, and now that following year, you have Tatum, Brown, and whoever.
Here's the other thing I will say that I think that the Celtics do, and the Warriors for the most part have done, that a lot of other teams don't really operate this way, is that there is this tendency to almost, like, I don't know, trade machine playing Madden style of football, like, okay, I'm going to flip this pick and go get this guy, or I'm going to open up room and sign this free agent, and boom, new super team, let's go. We've seen that, like, the Sixers try to do that, the Nets try to do that, the Suns try to do that, even with a lot of money involved. Mm-hmm. All these teams try to plug and play guys into their core, and it doesn't work. It doesn't even get them as far in the playoffs as they would think, let alone back to the finals. You look at teams like the Celtics, you look at teams like the Warriors, aside from this Jimmy Butler move, which didn't work for them. These are teams that build and develop. And what's frustrating to me about the new CBA is that building and developing then is forcing them to potentially move on from guys when they're doing it what you would think is the right way.
And look how long it took for Jaylen and Jason to figure out playing together. Like, that to me is the main reason why I want to keep the Jays together. Because why are we going to risk? I know Wiggy's brought up Giannis. Like, would you rather have Giannis come in and send Jaylen Brown out? I don't know if Giannis and Jason will play off each other the way that Jaylen and Jason.
That's what I'm saying. Like, there are times, obviously, when it's worked with the last era of the big three with the Celtics, where you're able to get a free agent, you're able to trade for somebody, and boom, you got your big three, then you draft Rondo. I just think that in this modern era of the NBA, the way that the Celtics have done it is the right way, and I would rather keep rolling with your drafted players who you know play well off each other and can win a championship.
Well, it's going to get interesting. We loved having you on all season long.
Oh, thanks. I've loved being here, guys.
It ended early. Do you golf?
I don't.
Okay.
I know.
Would you
I
like
know
to take
not
chime
to,
on
not
in the next
to tread
match?
Into these waters. Like, I don't like doing things that I'm bad at.
Yeah.
So you Shime can't does. Get good yeah. at golf until you're bad first. And I'm just not interested in that as an adult.
Yeah. Yeah.
Shime, we're going to be hosting on Monday together. So hopefully this blows over by then because I don't want to deal with
it
these
It probably
calls.
Won't.
Yeah. No, it's this no, is this a tattoo. Yeah.
At least a year.
Are you guys doing this show Monday morning?
I believe we are, yes.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
6 a.m. Nice. To 10 a.m.
All right.
It'll be an easy dub for you against Shime, Mego, so don't even sweat it playing golf.
I like
easy
going
dub.
To the driving range, but I just I don't
be aware he doesn't show up until about an hour and a half into things. All right. You're the best.
He's got like a sad smile back there. You're okay, Shime.
Have a great Memorial Day weekend.
Yeah, you too, guys.
Any big plans? You traveling or hanging around?
I'm working. I'm working. Stinks. But that's the thing. It's like I don't even feel bad because it looks like it's going to be upper 50s already. I might check out the NCAA finals for lacrosse championships down at Gillette on Saturday. If anybody's got a hookup, call your girl because I'm trying to get tickets to Syracuse, Maryland.
Yeah, we'll get
Let's go.
Up. All right, Mego, thank you.
It's Tier Tuesday with Jones and Keith.
Tier Tuesday here on Jones and Keith. It's brought to you by Jackson Lumber and Millwork. You can visit Jackson Lumber and Millwork for all your residential remodeling or commercial building materials and supplies. Jackson Lumber and Millwork, providing solutions and delivering results since 1946. Busy day around here, Keith.
Very busy day.
We thought we'd talk a ton of Celtics on the program today.
Yeah.
Given Brad Stevens and his press conference yesterday, that's been put on the back burner a little bit. We are going to look at the Celtics trade value.
Yes.
And tier that off. What are the most valuable assets that the Celtics have? And we'll do that in just a moment, along with all the big stories out there today. Don Sweeney getting a 2-year extension from the Bruins.
There's something for everybody.
Bill and Jordan, reportedly.
There's something for the lovers.
Engaged.
Yeah.
Even the Red Sox winning without Alex Cora. A lot of interesting stuff going on out there. And speaking of the Red Sox, it's a 2 for Tuesday on WEEI.
What is it?
It's a 2 for Tuesday.
2 for Tuesday.
Let's roll.
Be caller 9 right now to the contest line, 617-931-0937. And if you have today's code word, you'll score a pair of tickets. See the Red Sox take on the Orioles May 24th at Fenway Park. Again, caller 9 right now to the contest line, 617-931-0937. Give the code word to Billy, and you'll score a pair of tickets. See the Red Sox and the Orioles May 24th, Fenway Park, all part of a 2 for Tuesday. You'll have two more opportunities on this show. 12:30 and 1:30 to win tickets. That'll continue through WEEI afternoons as well. We got Mike Vrabel speaking live at 11:45. We have the match at high noon.
Wow, it's almost too much.
Almost too much to keep track of, Keith.
I'm overwhelmed.
I agree, but we're doing Celtics trade value right now on a Tier Tuesday. What do we have for tiers?
All right, so Celtics trade value, because it is such a important, busy offseason, and it is already underway, sadly, and Brad Stevens spoke about it a little bit yesterday. We know they have to, or they're going to try to get under that second apron, and then some. So we're looking at all the players that are under contract for next season, as well as their draft picks coming up in June, and we're going to tier them based off of their value. So right now we have 5 tiers. That can change. Tiers are fluid. Top one, Godfather offer.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Nice.
Vito Corleone.
Big. I'm going to make him an offer he couldn't refuse.
Big deal.
I do a pretty compelling Vito Corleone.
Very mean, although Vito didn't do the offer, did he?
Oh, he said that.
Yeah?
What are you talking about?
I thought that was a Michael offer. I thought that was a Michael offer. Let me hear it again.
No, that's Vito.
Keith is
I want to make him an offer he can't refuse.
I can hear it now.
That's Vito.
Yeah, I think your impression threw me off a little bit. I expected him to be a little scratchy.
I think I have allergies. So... Godfather offers the top tier. You're gonna need to show up with a Godfather offer for us to part with people in this tier. Next one down, Good Hall.
Okay, that sounds good.
I'm gonna need a good haul.
Nice. That's
a Godfather offer. You have to get the Godfather.
That's a good return.
I need a pretty good haul.
This is more of a Michael offer.
Yeah, that's more of a Michael. Let's make a deal.
Sometimes the best deals you make are the ones that you don't.
Wow.
That's like a Fredo. It's like a Fredo Corleone.
That's a Fredo offer. There you go.
Let's make a deal. Right? Maybe not the best player in the world, but there's a deal to be done. Next tier down, take them. Just take them.
Yeah, you can have
them. Take them.
They're yours.
Who is this? Like, go away.
And then the last one, please take them.
My offer is this. Nothing.
There's Michael.
There we go.
It all
comes full circle.
So 5 tiers for all of these players. Well, let's begin right off the rip.
Yeah.
Jason Tatum. Out for the season next year, we assume. And how does he recover from the Achilles on down the line? A lot of questions now with Jason Tatum.
I think the initial thought would be he's in the top tier no matter what. Does the injury change things for you?
No. Godfather,
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
Now,
I agree.
That doesn't mean he can't be moved. I believe most players in all sports, you should listen on all these offers. So tell me what the offer
is. You just have to get a huge haul in return.
Right. And maybe the injury even changed that for some fans out there, but I would say Godfather offer for Tate.
I would have to agree with that.
Okay.
Jaylen Brown. Now, Jaylen, he makes a ton of money. So does Tatum.
It's not a Godfather offer.
I think it might be.
You think so?
So
I want a good haul.
Well, is Cooper Flagg, for example, a good haul? Or that's a Godfather offer.
That's a good point. But I need a lot less for Jaylen than I need for Tatum.
But I think they're both, like, I want to keep both guys, is my point. Like, I want them both on the team in 2027, so I would only part with him for the Godfather offer.
So you need a Cooper Flagg, nothing less for Jaylen Brown.
Pretty much. Otherwise, I'm keeping him. I think he's got too much value.
I see what you're saying. Right. It's like, Tatum has more trade value than Jaylen, which I guess is how I was looking at it. But
there's only five tiers.
I'm not really trying to break them up.
You're trying to do power rankings again.
I am trying to do power rankings again.
They can be on the same tier.
Put them on the Godfather.
All right.
I'm going to make them an offer he can't refuse.
Now, you ready for this? I was on TV last night, Bragg.
Oh, and, nice.
I was asked, what percent chance is Jaylen Brown back on the team? I was like, 95.
Yeah.
I should have said 93.7. That's a miss by me. I said 95.
Good number.
I'm like, you'd never say never.
Yeah.
And Chris Forsberg, who covers the Celtics, said 89%, which means 11% chance he thinks Jaylen Brown's gone.
It's a high percentage.
Really high.
Yeah.
I was not prepared for that. I almost fell out of my chair. Anyway, all right, next one down. Drew Holiday. Drew Holiday is under contract for two more years, then a player option. So he really has 3 years at, we'll call it good money, really good money, but still not supermax money like Brown and Tatum. He also kind of was not the same guy. He's kind of broken down a bit.
Is Drew Holiday, let's make a deal? Is he a good haul?
I don't think you can expect a good haul.
I think it's let's make a deal.
I think it's
sometimes the best deals you make are the ones that you don't.
And I think based on your current roster, if you're really trying to shed salary, get under the second apron, still be competitive next year, I love Drew Holiday. I think you have to move on from him.
And you got
to
listen. Like, let's see what's out there.
You
like,
let's make a deal.
Let's make a deal.
Let's make a deal.
Yeah.
Listen. That's not a tier.
No, I'm saying,
all.
But you got to, if somebody calls let's you up, you have to listen. You can't turn them away. Let's make a deal. And if the deal's right, let's do it. Let's make a deal. That's a good spot.
I think you have to do that. Kristaps Porzingis.
Okay. We have Godfather offer, take good him. Haul. Let's make a deal. Take him. Is he a please take him?
He might be a please take him.
I think he might be a please take him.
The guy said after game six, he played 11 minutes and wanted to take a sleep. He was like, I'm super tired right now. I was like, no.
I don't think Brad, we were going to spend more time on this today. All the news had us go away from. I don't think Brad did him any favors by being like, he's going to play in Eurobasket and he just, you know, he has some post-viral fatigue. I don't think he did
long
Porzingis.
COVID? No, it's not COVID.
We were told it's not COVID.
It was long COVID, though.
Yeah, it's
true. Is that different? A different animal altogether?
A non-COVID illness, I guess, could be the results of COVID.
Should we
circle
back to the mold guy from last week? Maybe he's got
mold.
Honestly,
we were far too dismissive of that guy. I say he's please take him.
I think he's please take him, although in a weird way, you can't rely on him. That's why he's a please take him. But just for the layout of the roster, because Horford and Cornett are both free agents, so they won't be on this list. You have, like, no bigs. So, right. You almost need Porzingis more than Holiday based on what you have. But Porzingis is only signed for one more year. Even if you brought him back, what does he play, 41 games? And he's sleepy during most of them?
If you're lucky.
All right. Derek White.
So Derek White, to me, that's a good haul.
Okay, that sounds good.
Derek White's a Godfather offer?
Well,
Derek White's a good haul.
If you factor in the contracts, do you get more for Derek White than Jaylen Brown, even though we all acknowledge Jaylen Brown's a better player than Derek White? You know what I'm saying? Like he makes half the money, but he's not half the player.
Maybe.
I think it's
a good haul. You can't say you need a god, like I need Cooper Flagg for Derek White. Like, no. So that's a
good point.
Good haul.
Yeah. All right. Peyton Pritchard. Really good contract. Sixth man of the year. Might even start for you next year.
Now that you say
that sounds good.
When you make the contract argument, he probably is in the good haul tier. Like, why would you trade? Why are you, like, calling him up being like, hey, let's make a deal for Peyton Pritchard?
You almost can't.
It's not a Godfather offer. So, yeah, it's a good haul for Peyton Pritchard.
Sam Hauser. So he goes up. So he made, like, $2 million this year. Then he jumps up to, like, $10 million.
Is he take him or is he let's make a deal? I think he's let's make a deal.
Let's make a deal.
Sometimes the best deals you make are the ones that you don't.
I'm not giving him away. Bill Chisholm might give him away and be like, I save what? Take him.
Yeah.
Please take him.
But then that's also a
year
from
now. Let's make a deal.
Yeah, I like Hauser. He didn't have a great year, but he's also one of those guys that if you didn't have him next year, you'd be like, you know what we need? Like a Hauser type. You're like, yeah, you just got rid of him.
Yeah, you ditched him.
All right, now we're going to get into some of the other bottom of the tier guys. First round pick, rookie Baylor Shireman.
I mean, I'm not saying take him. Is he let's make a deal?
Yeah, probably.
Sometimes the best deals you make are the ones you just got.
Yeah. And he's a cheap guy, so what would be the point of dealing him? Right.
Yeah, but if you throw him into a deal to get a little something that you want, sure, let's make a deal on Baylor Shireman.
Xavier Tillman.
My offer is this. Nothing.
That's a take him.
Take him.
You can have him.
Take him.
He's yours.
Kata. I kind of like
Kata. My offer is this.
All right, we're not.
Nothing.
What is he? Does he take him?
Yeah,
I think he's probably take him.
I think those guys might be lower if you weren't already moving on from Horford and Cornette, or at least possibly moving on from those guys. Like you kind of need somebody to play up front.
You do.
So, let's see. Jordan Walsh.
Jordan Walsh is a take him.
Take
Who
him.
Who is this? Like, go away.
That's fair. JD Davidson, the G League Player of the Year.
Who is this? Like, go away.
That's another take him.
Take him. All right.
Yeah, this is now again. That's a busy tier.
It is a busy tier. All right. Finally, the first round pick, which is 28th overall, they also have a second round pick after making a deal. I think it was the Porzingis deal, which is 32 overall. So I don't know how much value really either pick has, but you could always package the two together, move up a little bit.
Yeah, I'm
draft.
In.
I don't know.
I think not to do them both at once, but I think pick 28 and pick 32. That's let's make a deal.
Let's make a deal.
In the right deal, I'm moving them. Right.
Let's make a deal.
Sometimes the best deals you make are the ones that you don't.
If it was,
I would even go. But yeah, especially because they're in a spot now where they need cheap guys.
Yeah,
that didn't come out right. But they need affordable contracts.
Yes, there you go.
That's what I meant to say the first time.
Yeah.
I think they have a little bit more of it. Normally, I would say, oh, you're a good team, bottom of the first round. What are you going to really do with that? Go ahead and flip it. Like, Brad Stevens hasn't really had many first-round picks in his time here.
No.
But, yeah, let's make a deal.
Okay, so where do we settle on our Celtics trade value tiers?
All right, Celtics trade value tiers, the Godfather offer, just Tatum and Brown.
Okay.
Probably fair. The good haul would be Derek White and Peyton Pritchard.
Okay.
Now, again, this isn't ranking the players on their skill set. Yeah, you have to factor in the contracts.
The contract is important. Yeah.
Let's make a deal. Jrue Holiday, Sam Hauser, Baylor Shireman, and their two draft picks.
Okay, makes sense.
Take them. Tillman, Kata, Walsh, JD Davidson.
That might be our most perfect tier.
And then, sadly, please take them alone. Kristaps Porzingis.
I think the bottom tiers are our two best by far.
Yeah.
I think those are they're all good.
They're great.
I think looking at them, they're all good. I think the take them and please take them.
Just seeing Porzingis' face on the bottom one, I always feel bad. The guy's a nice player. He's just unfortunately not available.
You know, he's a nice player. Just please take him off the team.
Please take him.
Yeah, please. We're asking nicely.
Just take him.
So that's a Tier Tuesday every Tuesday here on Jones and Keith.
That was proof that radio guys talk over each other in all languages, including Korean. That was the Korean call of last night's Knicks-Pacers game, the Halliburton game tire that could have been a game winner in his mind but wasn't because he didn't get back behind the line. And the Pacers come back from 14 down, 138-135, get the win in overtime. Here's a crazy number before I know Ted Johnson's going to provide some numbers on Halliburton, who is no longer overrated. prior to last night, teams that trailed by 9 or more points in the final minute of the fourth quarter or overtime in the playoffs were 0 and 1,414 since 1998. Now it is 1 and 1,414 thanks to the Pacers, who
unbelievable.
They're living the life. I don't know when it strikes midnight. I don't know where it ends, but they are bringing fun to the Eastern Conference Finals and Indiana right now.
I thought they were fun last year against the Celtics.
Yeah,
I
mean, scrappy, yeah.
Okay, you'd say, okay, defense optional. All right, and maybe that's still the case. But I mean, they put up 138 points and only shot, Celtics, you listen, 37 threes. Not 60.
How many?
37.
But they did have a guy who hit 8 of 9 of his threes.
Yeah. No, they were pretty good percentage. They were 40% as
a team. Wait, Ted, how many threes?
37.
How did they score any points in their basketball game if they did that?
It's insane, right?
That's a half for the Celtics.
The Celtics actually missed more three-pointers in game one of the Eastern Conference semifinals than the Knicks took last period.
The Pacers are in the Eastern Conference finals. They ranked 23rd this year in three-point shots.
Mm.
So, you know, they didn't rank one in three-point shot. They ranked 23rd and have one of the best offenses. Again, they're not the most defensively-minded team, but they can score points, and they don't chuck up a bunch of threes doing it. One crazy stat nug for you. Tyrese Halliburton, okay, is now 12 of 14 on shots to tie or go ahead in the final 2 minutes of this season.
I believe that's called
12
clutch.
12 of 14.
86%.
That's insane.
Derek Jeter wasn't even that clutch.
Six out of every
Tom
seven.
Tom Brady wasn't even that clutch.
Almost.
Isn't that crazy?
Not quite.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
And he's the most overrated player in the NBA, according to their surveys.
Supposedly. So
they're a fun team. You know, we talk about it. Neesmith, you and I have talked about it, Ted, about how he was a first-round pick here, was supposed to be a sharpshooter, supposed to be the best
overall
shooter.
Pick. Best shooter in the draft.
He wasn't that. He became this scrappy try-hard, and then last night he reverted to looking like the best shooter in the draft.
8 of 9 from the three, and just real quick on Aaron Neesmith. So his last year here, so he only played here 2 years, 2021 and 2022. He was a 27% shooter from three.
Yeah,
so not too good. This year he's a 43% shooter from three. So
massive uptick.
Took some time. You can sit there and go, do I need to be mad at? At Brad, it wasn't Brad. No, it was
Udoka?
No, Danny Ainge. Mm-hmm. You can't.
There's a lot of water under the bridge.
It felt like that was the right move at the time, right? Yeah. I mean, Aaron, it just didn't look like Aaron was going to figure it out, and so, I'm not mad at Danny Ainge for not seeing maybe this coming, but. I don't know. The playoffs have been phenomenal. It is a little bit kind of like, the Celtics are just they're better team than, I'm sorry, the Pacers and the Knicks.
They should be in the finals.
And you go, is this a system problem? It's not a talent problem. It feels like a philosophical system issue with the Celtics. They won it last year. Everybody now knows what they're trying to do, so they defend them differently. You saw what happened this year, and now you have two teams that I think aren't better than the Celtics talent-wise playing in the Eastern Conference Championship.
So I think as much as Tyrese Halliburton got called the most overrated player in the NBA, I think the Pacers may be the most underrated team because while the Celtics did sweep them in last year's Eastern Conference Finals, they won the four games by a total of
29 points.
Yeah. Like not,
I've already looked, yeah, 29
not
points.
Not like every game.
Everything was close.
Was pretty nip and tuck without like clutch shots by Jaylen Brown, Derek White,
first
and some
game
crazy
went to
good
overtime.
Crazy good defense from Drew Holiday. Like that goes 2-2, could have been 3-1 the other way. Who knows which way it would have gone. So I think the Pacers, as people on the broadcast networks today are asking, is this a team of destiny? Perhaps. I don't know. It seems a little hyperbolic.
It's
but
a team destined to lose to the Thunder in
the
finals.
We are underrating them significantly because that's a these playoffs
great
too.
Finals, though.
It would be the most fun one, I think, if of all the variables and permutations for sure. But these playoffs are going to be remembered not for like the great basketball, but for being the most statistically anomalous playoffs I think we'll ever imagine. Like how the hell the Knicks did that two games in a row, God only knows. How the Pacers did that against the Cavs, and now pulling that off last night. Go back and watch the last 2 minutes again, and you're like, no, there's no way they're going to. They don't blow it this time. You know how every time you watch Dan Conley's kickoff return in 2010, you say, this time he's taking it to the house. Every time you watch these last 2 minutes, you're like, there's no way they blow it. And they do every
time. It's a movie. These are like the movie sequences where you're like, if it were a movie, you're like,
that's right.
I don't know. Yeah. In a minute, I don't know if that really happens, but it really happened. And I love trying to buy into the Team of Destiny stuff like that. It's just the 0-1 Patriots, like just something came together in the right combination and it clicks and unlocks success. I'm rooting for the Pacers. I absolutely am. I've been a Miles Turner fan for a long time. I don't know how you can't root for Halliburton. I like the choke thing.
I loved it.
I like it in a sense anywhere, but obviously for the Pacers, Reggie Miller, the Knicks, like the whole backstory of it. Well, wasn't quite perfect because he thought the game was over.
It was not perfect. You're right.
And he kind of, I think, was like, uh-oh.
When he was doing it, I was like, oh, it's freaking awesome. But it's you just tied the game, bro.
Right. You didn't win the game with that shot,
right?
No.
And then I think the Knicks scored like the first 5 points in the overtime,
right? But they get the job done. So history will show that it was appropriate because it would either way. Even if the Knicks won in overtime, you still gagged away an incredible late game situation. Whether you salvage it in overtime, you gagged away that game.
Yep.
And that's what is a little, it's one of those things, is it good basketball or bad basketball that I'm watching by teams like the Celtics to gag away leads against the Knicks? The Knicks to gag away a lead against the Pacers. Yep. Do I give the Pacers credit or do I blame the Knicks?
It's a little bit of both, but I'd probably give more credit to the Pacers.
Okay.
Because not only was it just, I mean, they made their shots when they had to, but there was some good coaching in there. And this is where you kind of can maybe highlight coaching. A lot of people think that coaching isn't important in the NBA. I would beg to differ, especially in the playoffs. That challenging that out of bounds player, that was a foul on the Pacers player, and Rick Carlisle challenged it, and it was an out of bounds. The ball went to the Pacers, and so then they scored 3 points to shorten their deficit from 5-2 to then get the shot Haliburton made to tie it to go into overtime. So great coaching, great gutsy shots at the end. I think it was more of, it was a little bit of a choke job, it was, but man, those guys made tough shots when they need to, and really good coaching at the end as well.
Where do we think this is going to go? Because the very end was very interesting. And Stiz, I think we have this audio from Stan Van Gundy at the very end of the game when there, I believe, is 0.2 seconds on the clock, and the Pacers are inbounding, and he's like, you don't even... If I were this guy, yeah, I'd just hand it to the guy in the Knicks. Or what, I think it was Cat, Karl Anthony Towns. Mm-hmm. And to me, there's a little something there that can go over to the next game.
Like, oh, we're for talking, sure.
So, Stiz, roll this audio, and then we'll touch on it.
You can literally take the ball out of rounds right now if you're Indiana and hand it to the guy. You can hand it to Karl Anthony Towns. He can't shoot it with 0.2.
0.3.
I would just hand Karl Anthony Towns the ball right here. Well, I would.
You are just throwing salt in the wound here,
I
Coach.
Would. I'd just give him the ball.
That's exactly what he did. And Towns fired it.
Oh, yeah.
And the game is over, and Indiana has won coming back.
He handed it to Karl Anthony Towns, who just chucks it down.
I think Adarajas was off doing something else.
So there wasn't enough time. But as Reggie Miller said, that's Reggie Miller, right? Chiming in there, who said,
yep,
you're adding salt to the wounds. So the Knicks just gagged it away. And I think it's good, too, because I think that has carryover. And it's not like I have great rooting interest in this series. I'm rooting for the Pacers. But if the Knicks use that as some motivation and that fuels even more, whatever, angst.
Like
because you're being a dink.
Oh,
like,
it's super dinkish.
No doubt.
But a lot of times you see guys inbound the ball off another guy's back or leg or something.
If I were Karl Anthony Towns and I knew the situation, I would have thrown it back at him. Absolutely would have thrown it back at him. Now maybe we got a melee, who knows. But that's good because these two teams need that because they don't have the biggest stars. I mean, Jalen Brunson's a big star, and he scored 40-whatever.
A forgettable 43.
Well, Cat and him had like 75, 80 points.
Yep, they did,
It
yes.
wasn't enough.
As they should have. Never had that game against the Celtics, by the way, the two of them.
78 points,
but,
yep.
Yeah, but this series needs that little extra, I feel like, to get the casual viewer. You know, to get, because a lot of people around the country are probably like, Knicks, Pacers, I'm not really overly excited about that series.
If you bring it back to the Celtics, like, how does this game, when you watch that game and I think about the Celtics, I just sit there and go, okay, the Celtics have more talent than both of these teams. It's the system that is flawed. The Celtics shooting threes is the problem. Or there's in their analytics. I mean, did you see the Pacers doing the Hacker Robinson last night? Were they doing any of that BS that the Celtics were obsessed doing? And when they were doing it, thinking that they were taking the Knicks out of their game when maybe they were really taking themselves out of the game by doing that. You didn't see Carlisle doing that kind of stuff.
Is it the system or is it the mentality? Is it more of the style or the mental way they play? Because the Pacers go at you. They're fighters.
But one leads to the next. The system leads to the soft, style.
Right, because I was looking at it. One of the Twitch chatters brought up that Haliburton shot 12 threes, Neesmith shot 9. So 21 of their threes were those two guys, and then it's just like a sprinkling of everybody else. So this isn't the everybody gets to shoot 7 threes kind of Celtics performance. There is a juxtaposition here comparing these teams. I would also compare the expectation.
I don't think the Pacers have an air of entitlement to any one of them. They're all these, like, guys that we know and have had some nice years in different spots that are all this collection of almost like the Expendables.
Oddly,
they're the
playing Expendables. Together as a team.
Yes.
Isn't that weird how that dynamic works?
Playing as a team, playing scrappy, playing till the end. Right. Now, they do have an opponent that probably, but you know what? They did it to the Cavs, so screw that. And they might have done it to the Celtics. As much as we think the Celtics would have won this series with the Pacers, or as much as I think even the books had it, if the Celtics advanced, they were going to be favored over the Pacers. Just because they believe that doesn't mean it was going to happen. And the Pacers got a little something-something. And also, you don't luck into the Eastern Conference Finals 2 years in a row.
No.
That's not luck. That's not just like, huh, we really, really got fortunate that that played our way. No, they're a pretty good basketball team with pretty good talent and a pretty good coach that you put it all together is good.
It's just, it's one of these teams that you look at and you go, man, is it really going to fit? You know, Siakam with Turner and Halliburton and I don't know, you throw in Aaron Nesmith and you think, how's this all going to come together? And it has. I mean, they put up points, and you know what? That's where I kind of credit the coaching. You know, I think Rick Carlisle's a good coach. He was he was in Dallas. He is here. He can take pieces and he can see how they fit, and he knows what buttons to push. He can coach his ass off at the end of games, coming out of timeouts. I mean, you're telling me part of the success for Tyrese Halliburton, who's 12 of 14 on shots the tie or go ahead in the final 2 minutes of just this season. You don't think some of those plays were drawn up by Rick Carlisle? They got him open shots? Of course there were. So
absolutely.
The coaching is something to highlight for this team as well when you're talking about the Pacers.
You never asked your question.
What's the question?
You had a question before we came back from break.
Gosh darn it. Cementhead Ted forgot what my question was.
So Halliburton is clutch.
There
Jason
you go.
Tatum.
Oh, well, I didn't say that question. On air. I didn't say that.
I know.
On air. You're bringing that out. I don't want it to phone line.
It's a question.
What was the question?
I don't know.
Okay, how about that? Who would you rather have in the last 2 minutes of a game? Tyrese Halliburton or Jason Tatum?
And I like how you phrased it. Halliburton in the last 2 minutes.
Halliburton
the whole game.
All day.
Jason Tatum.
I'd take Jason Tatum. Jason Tatum's a better all-around player, but I got in trouble earlier in the year when I said Donovan Mitchell was more clutch than Jason Tatum, Scal agreed with me. Just because you're clutch doesn't mean you're overall the better player, right? There's clutch guys that just, they come up big at the end, but they need other people to help them get to the end. They're not good enough to carry to that point.
Brunson's more clutch than Tatum.
He was Mr. Clutch this year.
Yes. Mr. Clutch. So,
and he's also.
But that's the quality that we here in Boston value, I think, more than anything, to be honest with you.
Oh, David Ortiz, Tom Brady, Larry Bird, clutch guys that can hit you that game winner, that game tying, whatever, make the play with the game. Edelman, drop. Oh, last drive, catch, right?
That's right.
Like, that's an example. Julian Edelman's had a ton of drops in his career that we don't remember.
Big reason why we look at Jason Tatum the way we do. Because you don't, if he had the numbers that Tyrese Halliburton, we'd look at Jason Tatum totally different, I think.
Yes.
If he was more clutch at the end of games.
Right. I mean, and then we had last year's example that Brown was actually the more clutch guy when the game was on the line. The corner three in Indiana to go to overtime.
Oh, no, Jalen Brown.
Brown.
Yeah.
It was absolutely
Jalen
Brown.
Not game four,
and then Jason Tatum scored like 8 points in overtime.
Right.
But it's like, you wouldn't have had that shot if the clutch guy didn't get you to overtime, so you could be the scorer. So, no, that's a good question. I didn't mean to bring your.
Okay.
And I didn't.
Right. I just don't need it today.
You
I'm good.
I'm just, you know,
any other secrets you want to bring out, Andy?
Yeah, really? Thanks. Yeah,
I don't think
exactly
we have any. We don't have secrets.
Anything
here.
Else that was shared in the minivan in Green Bay that you want to dig up?
That thing you said.
Should we do a sideshow Pacifica talk?
No, when he took out the latex gloves in the Pacifica, that was two stories.
You were like,
whoa,
we're not that good of friends.
We're not that good of friends. No.
Cold finger.
Any party or whatever? No, we're not going there.
Back to the leads. Curtis, yours this morning?
Good morning. My lead is related to Kevin O'Connor, basketball reporter for Ringer and other places. And he had this to say about the potential trade of Jaylen Brown and Derek White.
What is his trade value? What does that look like?
I think it's massive. I do. Like, think about Houston, for example. If they wanted to reunite Ime Udoka with Jaylen Brown, they don't get Giannis Antetokounmpo. If the Houston Rockets on draft night come calling with the number 10 pick, Fred VanVleet's contract, which will only have 1 year left after his team option kicks in, and a bunch of other high-value future picks. They have Suns future first-rounders, among other teams as well. If you're the Celtics, I would think you at least have to listen to that offer if Houston comes calling with that. But it's the same thing for a guy like Derek White. If the Golden State Warriors, if they were to call up and offer a Mikal Bridges-esque package, four first-round draft picks for Derek White, you gotta listen. And so those are the paths I can't stop thinking about with the Celtics, even though the easiest thing to do is to come back, as Phil said, Derek White, Jason Tatum, Jaylen Brown in the 26-27 season and roll it back and try to win again. That's the easiest path for sure.
So, I believe strongly today, May 22nd, 2025, that we have seen the last of Jaylen and Jason on the same team.
Ooh.
The wow. Houston idea makes perfect sense. Reunite with Ime. No state tax. And I just, the downside next year, let's say the Celtics go 30-52 next year. It's an awful year.
Mm-hmm.
And Jaylen Brown struggles. And Wiggy's right, when he's the alpha, it's a totally different story. He's going to have the best defenders. The offense is going to run through him, and he's not as talented as Jason Tatum. Then what do you do? Then the world sees he's not worthy of this return, and you're kind of SOL. So, obviously, Brad Stevens will listen to every trade offer. That's what GMs do. I don't know if it'll be now or later, but if I were Brad Stevens, I would think long and hard about it.
However, the two of them together have won a title.
Yep.
So you could,
and they also lost to an inferior Heat and an inferior Knicks team.
You could cobble things together for a season, anticipating that the two of them coming back, they will be what they were last season when they were able to win a title.
But if you go with that idea, you're not going to have the same team around them. Right. If you wait for, like he said, Jaylen Brown, Derek White and Jason Tatum in the 2026 season, you're not going to have Drew Holiday. You're not going to have Porzingis. You probably might still have Pete Pritch. You won't have Al Horford. So what does that team look like for you when Tatum does come back?
Well, it could be a down season next year, but not as down as if you don't have Jaylen Brown. And I hear what Curtis is saying, where like if you keep him and he doesn't live up next season, it could be a disappointment. But I think that he's going to get a pass next season. I think the fact that Jason Tatum's not there, nobody's expecting this team to be back to championship caliber. I mean, I hope.
But Curtis is right. He's kind of exposed. Like if he can't carry this
the trade value is what would go down.
Yeah.
Trade value.
And the other thing is, when Brad Stevens did the year-end presser, it's what he didn't say when he was asked about the contracts and the second apron and all that. He said, clearly, this is something we're going to have to evaluate, and we'll get together and do that. At no point did he say Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum are Celtics as long as I'm in charge.
Yeah. All right, Curtis, thank you.